I seem to have a little bit problem there, but and I switch them because first I want to talk about atrial fibrillation, new approaches to improve mapping specific rotor ablation, which kind of nicely connect to the two previous presentations we heard. And the other one, which is also my my favorite topic, is prevention of complex cardiac rhythm, antiarrhythmic effect of constant DI pacing protocol. And I switch them because I might not be able to go to that topic, but I really want to show you a real-time optical mapping system with a control of alternance in the heart, which everyone thought was impossible. Just in case, I will just present optical mapping data. So first, I will talk about atrial fibrillation, new approaches to improve mapping-specific rotor ablation. And as I already said, there was a lot of, stuff that was introduced. What is atrial fibrillation? And there are two basic approaches to control it, rate control and rhythm control for atrial fibrillation. And for PVI catheter ablation, depending on what kind of atrial fibrillation people have, either paroxysmal, persistent, or long-standing, you have clearly a very different successful rate for ablation. That's why the most strategies right now are focused on persistent atrial fibrillation because the rate is relatively high for paroxysmal atrial fibrillation. And paroxysmal versus persistent atrial fibrillation might have completely different mechanisms. And nobody actually knows what are the mechanisms for atrial fibrillation yet. So when the patient goes to the hospital, clinicians have a guideline what they have to do. It doesn't matter what would be the mechanism of atrial fibrillation. They will go and ablate PVIs, and then they do some circumferential and linear lesion, and if fibrillation is not stopped, they will try to ablate a little bit more. So this is my understanding that this is absolutely standard procedure. And now if the patient will not be free of atrial fibrillation, the question is, what do they do next? And this is the most important question because there is no further guidelines what they have to do. They have to, intuitively go and ablate regions they think will provide some, drivers or some other mechanism to maintain atrial fibrillation. And there is a huge controversy in the field, and we hear from you a little bit, which I want to maybe specifically point out. Do rotor exist in atrial fibrillation? And if you ask any people, any experimentalist who was in the lab doing optical mapping, we all saw rotors in ventricles, in atria. There is no question for us. But if you ask clinicians, they do not see rotors.
Just define what do you mean by
rotor. And I'm not sure I can play that movie. Let me try to. Okay. Because my screen doesn't work. Okay. This is a single stationary rotor we obtain, we see in rabbits. It's clinically will correspond to tachycardia, not a fibrillation, but we wanted to start with a very simple things. So we do not want to go in more complex ventricular fibrillation when you have a several points. So this is ventricles, because I want to present my experiment, but you can see the same in atria, and it was shown in humans, it was shown in big species using optical mapping, and Ifimov group and Fedorov group, they do see rotors in atrial fibrillation.
What's the size scale and the time scale?
So the rabbit size are like this. Maybe four centimeters.
This is a whole ventricle shown.
This is whole ventricle. This whole ventricle. This entire ventricle. Likely for us, a rotor was attached to epicardial surface, but it can be attached to endocardial surface, mid-myocardial, and then you might see a little bit different picture. Okay? So, and I want to start with, my idea how why the controversy exists. And because, as correctly was pointed out, just look at phase mapping. And this is what we use in optical mapping. Like, by definition, we look at activation and recovery, construct this optical mapping, and this technique will allow us clearly see rotors and clearly see the pivot point of rotors, rotation, calculate everything. But if you look at what clinicians has as their information available, they look at all local activation only, either unipolar or bipolar electrograms. And I put you here what is the difference between action potential and intracardial recordings they have available for their studies. And that might explain why they do not see rotors, because if you look at only activation front, it's very difficult to see, to visualize rotor. And I will show that the only commercially available software, Tapera by Narayan, they try to use some kind of phase mapping in their system. That's why I kind of believe they are on the very good track to eventually see rotors.
So is that actual data that you collected?
Yes, this is actual data.
The electrograms?
Yes, I will show you electrograms. Oh, I will show everything. Okay, but this is just an explanation why there is a controversy there. But assuming that the rotors exist in atrial fibrillation, it's a big assumption, nobody knows it, but we kind of have to start from somewhere and we assume. So commercially available electroanatomical mapping system are the following. I'm not sure this is a complete list, but this is a major player. Carto, Navex, RhythmView, Rhythmia, and Tapera as well. And the main approaches they use to determine or to find out the pivot point of rotor is local activation time, cuff map, complex fractionated atrial electrograms, or dominant frequency map. As I mentioned, phase map is used for rhythm view only, and it's based on the same type of information that we are getting from optical mapping.
Cardio Insight as well. So Cardio Insight system created.
Cardio Insight, thank you, because I wasn't sure it's a complete list. Okay, but this is what is available to clinicians to identify these points for ablation. And as I mentioned, all of this information, except of the one from RhythmView and CardioInsight, they use only local activation. That's why a few years ago, our main objective was to develop approaches that are based on different physiological features other than activation and recovery to help to analyze signals from electrograms and to help clinician to pinpoint the location of the rotor, the pivot point of the rotor. And we developed six different techniques, but I present four of them here. And one is a frequency domain, multi-scale frequency, and three are in time domain. Symbolic dynamic approaches, Shannon entropy, as you heard today. It actually gives a worse performance. Multi-scale entropy, and I will show a slide showing it. And high-order statistical approach, kurtosis. Yes.
Just for clarification, these electroanatomical mapping systems are catheter-based, except
yes.
for the cardio inside,
yes.
and they only allow sequential acquisition, maybe at one or, let's say, 5 or 10 points at a time.
So it will be in my limitation slide, but typically you can have two different type of getting data. You can have a basket catheter, which record information from entire atria at low spatial resolution at the same time. And you can have sequential mapping when you go at different time to map entire atria and to get a very fine spatial resolution, but in time, it's take 10 minutes for Hiroshi to map atria. So there are two type of procedures that are available in the clinic. Okay, and definitely I think approaches have to be, normalized or adjusted to comply with either of procedures because you need to have a different approach. Because we developed it a few years ago, I just give you one slide describing.
So just a question.
Yes.
So this monophasic recording, right?
Yes, it's unipolar electrode.
Unipolar electrodes, you get a nice little depolarization. Mm-hmm. But there is still poor information, but there is still some information after that in the repolarization. Do all the commercial available software?
They don't use it.
They don't use it
no,
at all.
No, they only use activation time.
Only use activation.
And I will show you, it's really difficult, I'm not sure, but it's really difficult to get information about repolarization. The second peak is almost indistinguishable. You cannot distinguish it.
Can we go back just to look at the sequence?
I will have a beta.
We'll have better later.
I will have a beta, so.
You would think that maybe it's not as good, of course, as a transcript.
I will show you, I put a raw data here, and you will see yourself, but the only even Tapera don't use repolarization. I think they use
You can't really measure repolarization.
You cannot.
What is frequency responsible?
It's so small. You cannot measure.
What frequency?
It's in the zone. It's just basic. It's not decoupled. It's not decoupled, right?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
For unipolar electric.
It's just unipolar recording.
It's not decoupled, right?
I'm not sure I understand the question, but no, it's not the CK. Well, I will show you record. Okay, sorry.
And what you've done, you will use also only the depolarization, or you will use more?
No, actually, we are trying to say that we want to use other information. We don't want to use activation or repolarization because it's not, we cannot derive this information.
You're still using that same signal.
We use the same signal, but we're using a completely different information. To apply to the same, yes, to use the whole signal, yes. Because, again, recovery, it's almost impossible to take from clinical electrograms. We cannot do it. So, and this is the four techniques that I'm presenting, multi-scale frequency. It's the same as dominant frequency, but it's taken into account that there are some other frequency, and it's used 8 log-Abar filters to put all this information together. Kurtosis, it's a higher statistical approach that basically tell you how peaked is your distribution of information. So high kurtosis will correspond to that distribution, low kurtosis will correspond to that distribution. Shannon entropy, you heard a lot about today. Multiscale Shannon entropy, do not be confused with the word Shannon. It's completely different entropy. It's analyzed short time series data over different time scale to capture intrinsic complexity. So it's basically taking time scale, and the question is asked how this time scale or time series is similar to another time series. And you can go back and forth in time and kind of try to do this measure of similarity between nonlinear time series. This is what is multiscale entropy. And this is, again, I just want to show a raw movie because a lot of saying there is no rotors in rabbit. This is stationary rotor in rabbit, and it was staying there for 5 minutes, and then we stopped recording because it was not interesting to look at it. Let me see if I can play face movie here. Yeah, I can play it, okay.
This is with DAM or something? Because I don't, it's very hard for me.
No, that was blebbistatin. We see plenty, I will show you, like figure of eight, three entry.
Yeah, we get fibrillation easy, but just one spiral wave is very hard.
Just one spiral wave, as you can see, it's a raw fluorescence intensity. I put it a little bit faster.
How was it initiated?
What was the initiation?
We usually do pacing until the, you know, higher frequency, and then we do burst pacing to initiate. Sometimes it's fibrillation, sometimes it's rotors.
So how hard is to initiate such like a stable?
It's actually we never was trying to study that, but sometimes in our recordings we have it, so we collect these moves. It's much harder than to initiate ventricular fibrillation, but you know, like 10%. But everything at physiological temperature.
There is a way to freeze heart inside to make just to leave only upper layer.
Yeah, survive. We don't do it.
And then actually David Rosenbaum was studying this for many years. Actually, then you can get the rotors on a regular basis if you make it.
It's not regular basis here. It's like 10% of our recordings, but we do see rotors.
Was this very sustained or did it terminate?
Yeah, it was five minutes and we stopped recording, so but 5 minutes is considered to be stable rotor.
So many experimentalists tell me that it's very hard to initiate reentry you can get fibrillation and so
fibrillation
in
you
your
see,
experiment, I guess.
It's, well, I don't know what's different. I'm very good at it.
Maybe there's the region of slow conduction.
No, in the same rotor we see fibrillation, same rotor was paced, and the way we do our experiment, we do our pacing protocol several times in the same rabbit. So sometimes you see rotor, then you do anti-tachycardia pacing, you over pace it, it go back to normal conditions, and you pace again, you're making sure that responses are the same as before.
But it's homogeneous.
It is homogeneous.
Regions of slow conduction.
No, I don't think so. Yes.
Do you know how old this rabbit was?
Oh, usually we work with 2.5 to 3 kilos. and they're like relatively young. They're not old rabbits. They're not old
six rabbits. Months. So that's a transmural filament, right?
You are looking at the look surface. At epicardial surface, and we were just lucky. But I will show you different image later on. So this is a very clear, you know, rotor or spiral way. In this case, you cannot argue, right? Because it's only one. That's why we want to use it to validate our techniques. And the way we validate it, from the face movie, we can clearly see, identify the core of the rotor. It's relatively stable here. So we know, we call it true core of the rotor because we use our face analysis. And then we use a very, well-known dominant frequency map, which clearly give you one frequency here, which is around, you know, I don't remember what is the frequency, 7.8. Oh, you look, you track the behavior of this phase point in time. It's trajectory of phase point in time. And what we did next, we look at the pixel 1, which is closer to the core of the rotor, and pixel 2 somewhere at the periphery of the rotor. And this is a typical time series, close to the core of the rotor, close to periphery of the rotor. And then we apply, and you clearly see that they are different. And this is where Shannon entropy, you know, it's helpful. You can understand Shannon entropy kind of give you a disorder, as you pointed out. And you can see that Shannon entropy will be very helpful in this situation. So we did multiscale entropy, we did Shannon entropy, we calculated multiscale frequency here, which is 16 hertz, because you see several peaks, but dominant frequency is only 7.8. And then we look at the voltage intensity distribution of this time series at each pixel, and we have that distribution at the core of the rotor and completely different distribution outside of the core of the rotor. That's why we were confident we can use kurtosis, we can use MSF, we can use all our techniques that we develop.
Shannon entropy giving more information. The power spectrum is very nice. It's showing that away from the rotor you get...
So Shannon entropy give you the measure of complexity at the core of the rotor versus at the periphery of the rotor.
So does the power spectrum show that?
That's why we have four techniques.
Yeah.
Three of them, and the question is which one is more robust, of course, and we want to compare at the end. So, and this is what we have. This is our original movie, 64 by 64, 3 seconds in duration, and we have a stable rotor, as I showed to you. And this is two-dimensional map calculated under this condition for 3 seconds and 64 by 64 spatial resolution. MSF, Shannon entropy, kurtosis, and MSC. And you can clearly see the core of the rotor. So all of our technique, if rotor is stationary, are able to show the core of the rotor. Now the question we ask, because we kind of want to go to clinical data, and in clinical data you might have a reduced spatial resolution and reduced temporal resolution. So what is going on, and if we have a reduced temporal resolution? We cut our original movie from 3 seconds to 2 seconds, 1 second, 0.5 seconds, and we kind of tested all our techniques with respect to robustness and accuracy to pinpoint the core of the rotor. For 2 seconds, everything was okay. For 1 second, for 0.5, MSC was, you know, as robust as previously. So MSC is very robust because it was designed specifically for short time series. As you can see, Shannon entropy out of all four techniques is the least robust. Okay? And what if you do have...
Remind me what MSC is.
MSC is give you information how similar one time series to another time series in terms of complexity. And you can draw a time box back in time or forward in time and to compare the similar series.
How different is from cross-correlation?
Cross-correlation is not as good because it's just telling you information. Are the signal correlated? Yes, they are correlated. But we want information how similar are the signal with all this distribution of complexity. So MSC is a little bit more high order of approach rather than correlation is very simple approach. If you apply it to single rotor, everything will be correlated there because it's a rotor.
You know? I mean, when you say correlated, it's two different things. What's correlated with what?
Well, if the question I ask how this pixel is correlated with that pixel.
But I mean,
if you see localization
yes.
for MSC, which is basically some sort of a correlation, you're showing a point.
Yes.
But it's correlation between two different points.
Well, we don't use correlation here. We use MSC. MSC.
So what is MSC?
Yeah, what is MSC?
Okay, let me go back to MSC. Okay, that's the MSC. So you have, let me see. So you have a time series here, and you these are the two pixels, and you can use in time the short time series from several pixels, and it's capture intrinsic complexity. I didn't put the slides. Capture intrinsic complexity of that of that time series, short time series, in compared to another short time series.
In any case, it is some statistics of signals between two different pixels.
Yes.
On your graph, you're showing the dependence of all the coordinates of one of those pixels.
We do pixel
graph.
By
next. Yes. Slide. Yes, in here.
In each pixel.
In here, you've got graphs. They are coordinates of some pixel, right?
Yes.
It's one of those
X
pixels.
X and Y.
Yes. What is the other pixel?
Okay, so we have two-dimensional graph right here, which is the two-dimension right there.
Yes.
And this is your value of MSC for each pixel.
No, you can't define it for one pixel. You just explain
yes,
it
in
two pixels to define it.
But MSC maybe is calculated for
yes,
given
you can
pixel.
Define.
You look at correlation to all other pixels or to a
different it uses information. Okay, let me go back. Okay, it uses MSC is uses that information for each pixel, and it's calculate a value for it, one specific pixel based on information from other pixels. It's already
all other pixels.
All other pixels. So for each pixel, you use all other pixels and get a one value.
It's some kind of mutual information.
It's like very similar to mutual information, but it's a little bit. Well, I have a formula there specifically.
But I use an optical data for this.
What is it?
What do you use this in?
This one? It's an optical mapping movie of a rotor in the rabbit.
As you were saying about electrograms.
Yeah, I am coming to electrograms. Because what we want, first we wanted to validate our approaches. And in order to validate, we need to make sure we have a rotor. And here we have a rotor.
And for MSF, you're looking at the temporal spectrum at the given point, or what?
At MSF, this is the spectrum of that specific each temporal spectrum across each pixel. Yes, we are not using any spatial analysis so far. We work with the time series, and we have a lot of pixels. And for each pixels, we calculate its own values. And
where is the peak? In MSC, what does
it tell us? It tells us that the value of MSC at the core of the rotor are different from the values at periphery.
But
that's
it. The fact that it's high, what does that mean?
It means that the values, I don't want to get into further interpretation. The only thing I can clearly tell you, we can visualize the core of the rotor. If the rotor is there, our techniques can visualize the core of the rotor. For Shannon, everybody already studied that Shannon entropy is kind of the measure of complexity. And you can see at the core of the rotor, the signal is more complex, which is represented by lower values right here. And then the second one is spatial resolution. Again, our original movie is that one, 64 by 64, 3 seconds. Now we keep 3 seconds, but we reduce, we take every other pixel, 32 by 32, 16 by 16, 8 by 8. So we are taking some pixel from our original movie, and this is what you can see as a performance of our approaches. Clearly very nice for 32 by 32, for 16, maybe not as good for 8 by 8, 8. And Shannon entropy is, the worst one. Now, this is very nice. This is single rotor. But what about spiral figure of eight reentry? This is another rabbit experiment with a beautiful figure of 9 8 reentry right here. Okay? If you look at it for some time, you kind of see that that core is stable and that core will meander more. Okay? But again, it's staying there for several minutes. It's very stable overall, very stable structure. Now we analyze this one. Again, we look at phase movies, we calculate the true location of rotor, because it's meander, you kind of have it distributed over space, and this is stationary one, dominant frequency does not give you anything, and this is the data close to the core of the rotor, pixel one, this is the data from the periphery, and we again calculate power spectrum, voltage intensity, and all our, you know, approaches. And this is what we have for figure of eight re-entry. You can clearly see two cores of the rotors. Some are more clear than other. And we do the same analysis, reducing temporal resolution, 2 seconds, 1 second, 0.5 seconds. Look how MSC is very robust and accurate. Shannon entropy is not as good.
Our spectrum is pretty good.
What is it?
First one. What is it called? The top frequency spectrum. Right?
This frequency, because it's MSF.
Correct me if I'm wrong. So yeah. Basically, this appears to work reasonably well when the rotors don't really move around much.
Just wait a second, okay? Can you wait a second? Everything works much nicer if rotors don't move.
That's the state of rotation.
For here, let me see. 8.1 hertz, dominant frequency.
8.1 hertz. So what would be interesting is to 0.5 second is still more. Let's see what it is.
We make sure it's more than half rotation.
Yeah, but if it's just one rotation, would be 0.125 seconds or something like that. It's one rotation at 8 hertz.
Yeah, I'm not very good.
Yes. Calculating under stress.
Yeah, we know that there is a problem of how many rotations.
What about if you bring it down to one rotation?
Yes. We still
have
to
down in time, because when you go to fibrillation, they may not last more than one rotation or two. So it would be interesting to push that.
It's very, very interesting.
Scale, right?
And what we try to do right now, try to calculate everything the same for ventricular fibrillation as Hiroshi did, but it's much more complex, so I'm not presenting this data because they are not complete.
So I understand why Shannon is lower in the top rotor rather than lower in top rotor than the bottom.
Oh, top than bottom?
This is lower than that one. I don't understand. So can you explain why this, you have a more meandering and you have high
Because, I mean, you look again at the time series, you look at the distribution of your entire information over time. Yeah. If it's meander, it will be, you know, more distributed over time. If it's stationary, it will be like very, very. It's my explanation. Okay. So, and again, with spatial reducing spatial resolution, it's work a little bit, and we publish it, but we wanted to go to clinical electrograms, okay? And just a summary for what we already published. We developed these approaches for frequency domain and time domain. Shannon entropy is the least interesting. And validation of this technique in animal experiment demonstrated that MSF, kurtosis at MSC, able to identify the pivot point of rotor regardless of progressively reducing time scale, reducing spatial resolution, and presence of meandering rotor, which I'm going to show in a few seconds. So what is the problem? How do you translate to clinical electrograms?
So you get fibrillation in the rabbit sometimes.
Yeah, we do. And
what happens when you do it during fibrillation?
We are doing it, okay, what I can tell you right now with certainty, we will be able to identify the phase singularity points of that fibrillation. But it does not mean anything yet. We don't know what does it mean. We will be able to identify a lot of, you know, points. But we have to make sure we understand.
Because there the rotors don't last long at
exactly.
A given point. And so I'm just, that's why I was asking if you push down to the frequency.
Yes.
It will still be a dominant frequency.
Yes,
right.
It's a very complex question because we need to, we will be able to get some.
Yeah, but you haven't done this yet, so you're in the process.
We done, we saw a lot of points, and we're trying to adjust techniques to get some meaning of our data yet. Since I cannot give you a meaning of this data, I cannot present, because I can present saying, look, this what happened. But okay, this is what we think would be a good transition to clinical electrograms. First of all, the nature of signal is fundamentally different in optical mapping versus intracardiac recording. And the first question we work with clinicians, and the first question they ask, will it work for electrograms or not? That's why we kind of were forced to go in this direction. Another limitation is a spatially distant location for these electrograms, and you try to address it in your talk. We are not there yet because I think it's very, very difficult question. Meandering rotor is another, limitation. Using basket versus sequential mapping might be require a different mathematical approaches. We are not there yet. And then another one that we've done is spatial correlation between different all approaches, and we use dominant frequency, LAT, and CAFAS, and new approaches, and I put here our approaches. So from now, I will present just unpublished data. It's a working data, but we absolutely sure about these results because I kind of, want to present it.
So electrogram, it doesn't necessarily distinguish between like one electrode and batteries, right?
I will show you electrogram right now.
But I mean, I'm just trying to understand, is it how specific that term is?
How specific is what?
EGM means, does it mean?
It's give you, it's right, like microelectrode, give you one. A local information.
One.
One.
Okay.
One.
That's all this.
Yes, yes. In basket, you have what, 60 electrode?
64.
We use PENT array, which is 10 electrodes, but they're moving sequentially for mapping. So it really depends on the way you do the data. So thus, our new approaches can identify the core of the rotor from electrograms. Okay? And in order to do it, the point to start, we use movies from numerical simulation of atrial human tissue. And let me see if I can. No, I cannot.
Didn't you try to do this to generate electrograms?
This is what we try to. Okay, believe me, this is a movie of stationary rotor. Okay, I cannot. Let me try one more time here. Okay, so this is stationary rotor. We calculated unipolar electrograms, and this is the movie from unipolar electrogram. Okay. And then from unipolar electrogram, we calculated bipolar electrograms. And this
which
is
which model was it?
It's a Tentascher atrial human model. And this is a movie that was, given to us by Sharon. And let me play you bipolar electrograms. Okay, and this bipolar. So all of them, you can visually see the core of the rotor. In unipolar or bipolar, but because we use all the spatial resolution, okay? And this is the difference between recordings in voltage, unipolar and bipolar from the core of the rotor and from periphery. You kind of see that they're a little bit different. So we use it as a first step, and we apply our techniques to unipolar electrogram. We very nice see the core of the rotor from all of our techniques. We use bipolar electrograms. We also see the core of the rotor from all of our techniques. So the first question, whether it's optical data or electrograms, we are saying our techniques can work with any type of data as soon as spatial resolution is good enough. Okay? Then the second question, we go to correlation between old approaches and new approaches. Because as we are thinking to publish a paper, everybody will start asking us, what do you compare to? And dominant frequency CAFAS are actually they are not correlated between themselves, and they are considered to be the gold standard right now. CAFAS, it's complex fractionated atrial electrograms. It gives you the information how complex of your electrogram, basically. It's a very subjective study, and I will show you, I think, right now.
Can you just remind us of the other acronyms, please?
Okay, so.
MSF.
Multiscale frequency, Shannon entropy, multiscale entropy, kurtosis. Sorry.
Kurtosis.
So, Elena, when you are transferring to the electrograms, did you start adding noise to these simulations?
No. You mean for numerical simulations?
Yeah.
No noise, nothing.
And wouldn't it have been better to take the experimental data with pseudo ECG?
Thanks for the question, because we did it. For our optical mapping, we calculated electrograms, we have the same data, and optical data is optical data. It has noise and everything. We calculated electrogram, both unipolar and bipolar, from optical data, and we have the same result, absolutely sure. We use numerical simulation for only one purpose, because later on I will show you a meandering rotor. And in numerical simulation, it's very easy to get a nice meandering rotor. That's why I'm showing you stationary from numerical simulation and then meandering from numerical simulation.
But it would have been nice to say, up to this signal-to-noise ratio, the technique
yes, it's works on the same movies. Yeah. If we use our optical mapping movies and do simulated unipolar electrograms or bipolar electrograms, it will work. We have this.
But again, the signal-to-noise was very nice in your face movies.
Yes, this is experimental data.
Right, but would be nice to say...
To use some noise.
Okay.
Yes, I agree, yes. I think at this moment we kind of want to proceed forward to clinical data, and we're leaving all these questions a little bit, you know, they're all very important questions, I agree. But we are so excited about our three-dimensional reconstruction, that's why maybe I'm skipping a lot of data here. So anyway, correlation between ALT approaches, which is dominant frequency, and complex fractionation atrial electrogram, and MSF. We did a lot of here, but what I'm going to show you today, it's only dominant frequency versus multiscale frequency, just to avoid a question that, you know, this has a different information. This is frequency, and this is frequency. We start with just frequency to avoid all other complexities. All right, what we did, we acquire raw intracardiac electrogram from patients, and they are 10 to 35 seconds long, from Mayo Clinic using CARTA system, using pentarray catheter, 20 spatial sites with 10 electrograms at each site. What we did, we removed noisy and no contact recordings, and there were 61 of those. Right now we are working to make sure we don't have to remove it, and we kind of think that our approaches will not care much about it, but at that moment I want to use a very clean electrograms to make sure that there is no noise and no contact. We did a bandpass filtering, and we use our dominant frequency and only one MSF, which I'm presenting today.
How did you end up using the very narrow bandwidth?
I'm questioning right now why we are using that narrow. I think the rationale was that, yes, I see, okay. That was done for MSF only, for frequency analysis. And we know that the frequency of atrial fibrillation is laying around 10 hertz or, you know, not more than 15 hertz. That's why I'm not saying that, I'm not claiming that we can do DF versus MSC, for example, for the same filtering. But filtering doesn't matter. We did a different type of filtering. Our approaches are quite robust to filtering.
Okay, so just as a background, mm-hmm. So usually for this kind of phase mapping clinical data, mm-hmm. the bandwidth is usually between 1 and 100 to 150 hertz. So I thought it was just a narrow, that's what I'm talking
about. I will not stay here because I think my students can have done a mistake here. So I will not, I leave this question open because I honestly do not remember. I remember we changed something, but what we decided to do at the end, I actually do not remember. Sorry, and I know that it's from 1 to 100, and yeah. Anyway, this is example of raw electrograms, okay, that we are working with. And by CAFES complexity, you can kind of see that, for example, that electrogram is less complex than, I don't know, that electrogram. And CAFES calculates the level of complexity of that electrogram.
Is it? Because of the scale, I can see. Is it
okay, this is what is it? Pulmonary vein?
I think it's pulmonary vein, and then are you sticking the pentarray catheter inside?
Oh, it's maybe pentarray. It's yeah, PV, it stands for pen.
1, 2, 1920, right? So it's yeah. A bipolar electrogram.
It's a bipolar electrogram.
Electrical lead as a tube.
And this is coronary sinus electrograms, as far as I remember it. Okay, so and just to show you a raw time series, this is an example of time series we are dealing with, and you see all the spikes, and there is no, and all this noise inside which we try to filter sometime, but again, for that talk, I do not remember what we filtered. But because of the presence of this noise, you cannot do this recovery information. You only can look at the peaks. From this electrogram, we calculated dominant frequency, we calculated MSF, we look at the distribution of voltage intensity from this time series, it looks like this, so we can calculate Shannon entropy, we calculate kurtosis.
What is the other big peak?
This
one? One block, what does the form in
there? This one?
Yeah.
Well, it's just your spectrum, I mean.
No, and 3 hertz.
Oh, that one? It's around 3 hertz.
Alternance, or
what is it? Well, it's atrial fibrillation. You kind of should not have alternance. I mean, like.
You can't say that. You shouldn't get alternance because in some of Narayan's electrograms, there's alternance.
It's alternance. So I will not say it. I don't know what is peak, but we concentrated on dominant frequency, and dominant frequency is a peak with maximum intensity, which is this one. And when we calculated MSF using 8 other peaks coming together, that would be 10.3.
There's probably 2% difference between the peak values. How can you say it's done?
It's not me, it's a definition of dominant frequency. That's a this is what people use right now in a clinical mapping, dominant frequency. This is what they use.
Well, your frequency resolution is very...
No one uses dominant frequency anymore. And then CAPE, what about that again?
What they use, what they use instead.
That's a kind of a one good metric to use, but then, as you say, it's an old metric.
So it's old metrics, and we just have to, you know, like use a metrics to compare these. And this is the one that is most robust, and this is the one that is present in CARTA system for our clinicians. That's why they tell us, you know, CAFES and dominant frequency. Okay, this is our 3D visualization. So you're familiar with the shell. We put these shells together, not we, it's our collaborators. We use information from electrograms, and it took several days to put this information back into CARTA system. It's a very unfriendly system, but this is what you see.
What's the spatial resolution of the map?
Spatial resolution? I
can imagine that this entire location has probably at 3,000, 4,000 points.
Oh,
so it's a regional energy,
it's very high resolution.
And that's how we map it.
So this is the movie, what you get from CARTA system for dominant frequency, okay?
Wait. How do you actually get the measurement with such a high density? What do you actually do in practice?
So we have 20 spatial sites. Yeah. Each site has 10 electrodes. So we have 200 electrodes, recordings, electrograms.
If it's fibrillation, how do you actually know where
they are? We know where they are, because this is where it took them 2 days to put it back in the CARTA system where they belong to. We extracted electrograms from CARTA system.
How do we in practice know where the electrodes actually are?
Because they recorded and put in, this is what is electroanatomical mapping for. You map, and you know where you map. It's record the location.
And what is the acquisition time range?
It was from 10 to 35 seconds.
It would take a long time, because you have one catheter in one location, you can take it simultaneously 10 different points, and it takes 10 seconds. And
yes.
You move it to different location, 10 seconds, 10 seconds, 10 seconds.
How do you get a single map from this?
And then you get a single map from it. Well, this is what they do in clinic, and we have to work with this limitation. As I mentioned, there is a basket catheter. There is a basket catheter. It's a big assumption. You can do sequential mapping when you do this high resolution over time, or you can do basket recording. It's a one catheter in atria recorded at the same time. So there are two different techniques. And nobody addressed what would be the, you know, limitations for each of the techniques. This is what they, you know, like.
I mean, if it's AF, the rotors are moving around like crazy. I mean, I'll show movies.
I absolutely agree. But still, the question is, how do you identify rotors? And you have to start from somewhere.
So the color and the dominant frequency, what's the scale for that?
I think on the next slide, I will show you the actual value because it was taken from CARTA system. It's not like I cannot see. It's right here, but I will show you. But my point here, if you look at two of them together, this is also a movie, but this is dominant frequency, and this is MSF. They look, you can kind of see that they look pretty similar, but not exactly similar. And the question is, what is dominant frequency or any other technique, like our technique, what are we looking at here? Because we know that our technique can get a pinpoint of rotor location. We don't know anything about DF. If I show you, do I have four of the, I don't have multiple of them. If you look at maps for all our techniques, they will be completely different. That's why.
One question, do you have data? Let's say you have electrode in place, and you take dominant, you take a kind of.
Yes, we have.
And then you repeat this recording a few seconds later and look again, whether your dominant frequency map is stationary or not.
Okay, so one point that maybe, just let me address, sorry. One point that that I want to emphasize, this is patients living on the table while they are ablated. You cannot request clinician to provide you data as you want them. You work with the data they provide to you. It's a big limitation. I would like to have a lot of different data, but there is no way I'm getting this data.
So this is actually what they use in practice.
This is what they use.
It's a special design, like one.
And they will go and ablate this point, and this point, and this point, and this point. This is what they practically use, yes.
This is for chronic AF, right?
This persistent AF, yes.
I'm a bit confused. So, so if you do the recording sequentially,
yes,
with 1 or 10 or 50, mm-hmm. You still, and then you merge the data, you always assume it's a stationary process,
you
otherwise it wouldn't make any sense. Now,
absolutely agree.
How could you then analyze based on this data for rotors which are transient?
Mm-hmm. I absolutely agree with your point, absolutely. But I'm saying that in order to move to, it's a lot of, questions that you have to address. I'm under big assumptions. If there is a stationary rotor somewhere, can we find this rotor using our technique? If there is no rotor, I cannot help. I have to go and create everything or investigate everything for fibrillation. Okay, it's just a starting point how to transfer from information we know from optical mapping to clinical electrogram.
How long does it take to actually get this?
So in this specific situation, it was around 10 minutes. But arrhythmia, for example, they might have a half an hour to get one shell like this, but they will have absolutely incredible spatial resolution. And they will claim that they see everything, forgetting that it's taken over half an hour, so things are changing. But this again, how they look at these electrograms.
I'm just trying to get a sense of, for instance, I mean, in principle, they can do it in 10 minutes, and they have half an hour, they can easily do 3 recordings and compare them.
They can do one recording. If you use a basket catheter, it's one catheter going inflated inside the atria, but you have only 60 electrodes everywhere,
right,
with a different spatial resolution. There's another way of doing the same mapping, but you will never get such a nice spatial mapping, but this is another way of recording. So there are two ways of recording.
Can I ask a question, though?
Yeah.
Because I agree with Stefan's comment. I mean, it's, fibrillation as a rotor creation and so on, to look at time series taken at different times in space.
I agree.
So we all agree. But there's a question to the clinician. One way of knowing whether it's stationary or not would be to, let's say that I repeat the procedure.
And see what happens, right?
And see what, at least twice. So you get that map and then you get it again at the same place. And you have to do it sequentially in time because you cannot map the whole thing at once.
I'm not
right?
sure how feasible.
But let's say you do it twice possible. And then you would compare, you could run your analysis
and take
MSF. How different would the map be? If they're very different, that you know, because what can happen?
So the short answer is it's going to be different every time.
Yeah.
And because you're trying to get some.
Because it's a complex
process.
Atrial fibrillation.
You could get some form of. You could have.
I have dominant frequency, so I can.
Okay. Let me try to answer you how we deal with this approach.
We know it's not a stationary process.
Elaine.
Atrial. Yeah.
I don't know. So we have to be careful. I mean, one would have to do that experiment. I don't know if it can be done.
But you might have it already, because I'm sure that you have some overlap.
Let me address how we deal with that specific question. So the next question.
I think the main point is that you're trying to help the clinician.
Yes.
So don't try to help them with something that they won't work.
Absolutely.
So you have to tell them
absolutely what to do next.
And what to move to the vascular catheter.
What to do next in our opinion. So what we realize, okay, let's assume that dominant frequency is a gold standard, but it can be some other, you know, gold standard. But I get this in three-dimensional information from DF and MSS. And the question I am asking, like, what does it mean, all these points? Can this information be useful even if the process, as you all pointed out, is non-stationary, which is completely true?
We don't know.
Yeah. And it might be different for different patients, okay? So, and the way we proceed, we apply two comparison methods. One is a very straightforward Pearson correlation, and the other one is kind of a novel one. It's Earth mover distance. It's actually to define the amount, if you have a two different spatial distribution, it defines the amount of work you need to apply to get that distribution to be exactly the same as this distribution. So it's two different comparisons, and amazingly, This is another. Now you can see the scale. So DF is from 6 hertz to 15. MSF is from 9 to 12. And if you look at point A and point B, for example, we know that catheter was here, and we know that catheter was here. So this is the distribution of electrogram from point A, here, power spectrum, and we did DF, MSF, and Pearson correlation, having a value of -0.94, for example. And here for side B, we did the same, and you can see another type of correlation, DF, MSF, and we have a Pearson correlation, 0.28. So we did it for all our sites. And what we recorded was the following. This is the spatial sites. We have 20 spatial sites, and this is the Pearson correlation, using the Pearson correlation. The gray area, we have to use the red lines to put some thresholds. So the gray area, this one and this one, means that the correlation is good. And for EMD, it's another spatial correlation. And we have to put a threshold here. Gray area means the correlation is good. You see how two different approaches show completely different results, what is correlated with what. But the only site that is present, this one, site number 15, has a good correlation using Pearson or EMD. So most probably, this is speculation, but we think that if rotor is sitting there, that would be at site 15. Because no matter how you calculate, how you correlate your data, site 15 will have a very high correlation between DF and MSF, and I will tell you the same site, if you compare all other methods, site 15 will show up. But so most probably the rotor is a...
You don't want high correlation, right? Because dominant frequency doesn't work. You know, because you want to have something...
Assume you have a gold standard that we can use instead of... For that, I agree. But what we can use as a gold standard?
So that's the, one of the problems of this kind of approach. Because you know, and for in vivo experiment, you have a gold standard. You have a reference standard. But the clinically, the only reference standard, mm-hmm. since we cannot see much, is termination ablation.
It's a termination,
or
yes.
Or maybe long-term outcome.
Yes, so I think this is a difficulty we will overcome. But if all our approaches, for example, being correlated between themselves, show one specific site, no matter what kind of correlation you're going to use, most probably something happened at that site. This is the only thing we can say. Because as you said, it can only be pre-ablated and after pre-ablation and after ablation data comparison, which is a prospective study, which is not, it's a clinical trial. We are doing it, but we are not there yet. All right. So this is our way to approach. And I promised to show a meandering rotor. And for this, I have a movie. Oh, it's automatic. Numerical simulation, meandering rotor, as you can see. Yeah, initiation, and it will meander. The beauty of numerical simulation, you can change one parameter, and it will go from stationary, which is blue, to red, which is a little bit meander, to green, which is a lot of meandering. And this is what I'm showing here, a meandering rotor. And this is our MSC approach, showing the trajectory of the tip. So MSC approach is very powerful to show the trajectory, even in the case of meandering rotor.
So a very under-resolved simulation.
What is it?
It's a very under-resolved simulation.
Okay. Do not ask me question. This simulation with a nice meandering rotor, we can reproduce.
So you show the critical data. So you assume these rotors are stable.
We didn't make any assumption. We just analyze whatever we have. We cannot make any assumption. We only can see what is given by different methods, and we now only can think what is going on there. And we think that most probably the site 15 might have a stable rotor, because no matter what you do, the site 15 is like stand out. And all other points right here, does not make any sense. Most probably they are coming from atrial wave breaks and everything. But if you ablate site 15, you might ablate all atrial fibrillation. But this is a very big speculation, because we don't know. Yes?
In the last slide, you said that MSE is...
And kurtosis. MSE and kurtosis are good for meandering.
It's sort of reflecting mm-hmm. the trajectory mm-hmm. of the mm-hmm. core. But you don't have temporal information in there, right? So it is basically a projection over the entire interval that you're looking at.
I think it's 3 seconds here.
Mm-hmm. If you would just plot the average intensity or amplitude of your numerical simulation for each point along time, would
and
you
this
see
is
similar,
what is trajectory?
A similar picture.
This is a picture which was plotted by looking exactly at the tip trajectory. This green trajectory as a true trajectory for phase singularity.
Yeah, but I don't see how you could, from the picture above where you see the trajectory mm-hmm. that goes a long time in space.
Yes.
How you relate this to the picture on the bottom, which shows...
Because if you look at this green trajectory, the contours, it will resemble that contours. Because we are saying MSC can give you information where your trajectory is. But again, it's very preliminary studies. We are working on this direction because we want to calculate it in time as well. But we are not there yet. We have to adjust our techniques. I'm just saying that some of these approaches can be adjusted to deal with meandering rotor. But it's ongoing work right now.
Is there any way to make it real-time calculations?
Yes, as soon as you find a way to get the data from Carter system and put it back. This is We spent 1 year to do it. It's not resolvable.
Yeah, probably you and I understand this better because one of the problems is that you get the data mm-hmm. with a finite time series, analyze the data, and so this is where the potential target is. But by the time the catheter, mm-hmm. you don't know where they are because you're
looking at the absolutely time agree. Time series. But this is technical problem unrelated to any of what I'm presenting. And we are trying to work with NAVEX system and actually Rhythmia to make sure we can input our information in there. Electroanatomical mappings, but they're very, very conservative. They are very conservative. So, but we are going in this direction. How much time I have? Okay, 10 minutes. I will really go through constant DI pacing. I don't want to, we are studying pacing, and we try to understand why pacing is bad by itself, and I really go quickly to our optical mapping. So we want to improve a pacing algorithm, for example, that can be used for which is cardiac rate synchronization therapy or something where you pace hard for a long time with periodic pacing. And we're trying to say it's very bad. I want to make sure that the concept is understood, the concept. Periodic pacing is a mechanism for alternance formation. Everybody knows this picture. This is a restitution curve. You have a feedback or your periodic pacing, and you create this nice diagram saying that if restitution is less than 1, it's very good, equal to 1, it's alternance, larger than 1, instability. But what is very important here, you need to have restitution and you need to have feedback. Or that line, Now, what happens if you eliminate feedback? You eliminate the entire mechanism for alternance formation. There is no feedback, you cannot construct this diagram. And this is what the diastolic constant DI pacing is about. It's eliminated that feedback. So it's eliminated the entire restitution-based mechanisms, a mechanism for alternance formation that is present. But it's only one mechanism out of many others. It can be calcium handling, it can be some other instabilities, which constant diastolic interval cannot eliminate. So it's only eliminate one out of many mechanisms. So feedback is bad, and we're trying to improve pacing by either providing constant diastolic protocol or by providing heart rate variability. And the question about heart rate variability is really interesting. Oh, and we do it with mapping model, single cell, cable, and experiments. But today I will only talk about experiments. So, so the idea that you can do anything in single cell, you have limited success in the cable, and nobody ever controls a heart, okay? Eliminated alternance heart. And this is what we've done for the past year, and this is what we just published. The question about heart rate variability, it's very important because this is what happened in the, you know, normal human heart. You do have a heart rate variability over time, approximately Gaussian distribution. And if you do analyze patient database, you see that for disease patients you have lower HRV, for health you have higher HRV. That's why when you talk to clinician, large HRV correlate with healthy, and low HRV will correlate with disease heart, which is ingrained in the field. So there is a misconcept saying that large HRV is good. It's completely not true. And this is what we try to show here in addition to constant DI tracing. So for single cell, we can eliminate alternance by doing constant DI pacing for HRV 0 and for 5%. When we go to the cable, and it's again Tentascher model, but we did several other models, you do have alternance for periodic pacing, you don't have alternance for constant DI pacing, a little bit of alternance here due to completely different mechanisms, not due to restitution mechanism. We looked at the cable of different lengths, and this is the length of 5, but we did up to 10, and we have the same data, that even if you have alternance, they are pushed to the region where you don't have a physiological pacing. But because it's all numerical simulation, and heart rate variability does not play a role, because it's all numerical simulation, and we can show that constant DI is good, but nobody believed us. They're saying that you really have to do experiments. And there, where we went a couple of years ago, to use optical mapping and to see whether constant DI protocol is working in optical mapping. And it's not very simple. It took us like 3 years to do it, because you need a real-time recording of APD to implement a constant diastolic protocol. It's very technically challenging. Optical mapping system, as stand right now, is an open-loop system. What does it mean? You have a heart, you record your movies from the heart, you look at these movies, and you can pace a heart independently. Also, you can get ECG from this heart. And what we actually did, we used that ECG recording from the heart simultaneously with movies. So what we did, we provide bit-to-bit APD measurements based on ECG recordings. So we wrote a real-time algorithm that look at ECG, defined R peak, search, defined a window for T peak, find the T peak, and then wait for fixed diastolic interval and apply a trigger. So we implemented constant diastolic interval based on overall ECG recording from the heart, which is a little bit different from constant DI. It's constant TR interval, but this is the only thing we can do in our optical mapping. And to make sure it's a real time, we calculated error, because you have to write data in the computer, you have to, you know, this memory. It's approximately 3 milliseconds, so we call it a real-time recordings. And this is show all the technical information. Now, so we implemented that, you know, real-time recording, and now our optical mapping become a closed-loop system. And for this closed-loop system, we applied periodic pacing, we applied a Gaussian pacing in which we incorporated heart rate variability. We also applied physiological pacing because some of the reviewers was saying, oh, maybe HRV is not really Gaussian, you cannot do it. So we did in vivo red ECG recordings and we, you know, scaled it to the rabbit size, so we incorporated the actual pattern of of in vivo animal recording, and we did a constant DI pacing. I skip this slide, and this is what we have, the presence of spatial temporal alternance. So black is alternance, white is no alternance, shaded is VF. So for periodic pacing, left ventricle, right ventricle. In periodic pacing, you have all the time we were able to induce alternance. 100% of the time, sometimes it's go to ventricular fibrillation. Look at constant
DCG or
no alternance in optical market.
And they were discordant most of the time.
I do have this data, so they become discordant over time because we apply, you know, like a different, we scan the frequencies. So they are concordant and then become discordant. But whenever you apply constant DI pacing, we saw alternance at a very, very low DI only in one instance, okay? We completely eliminate the presence of alternance in the heart.
This is how do you define it? Because I mean, you have an error of 4 milliseconds on the ECG, and then when you record, the recording is 64 by 64, so there is
so okay. Let me show you then. This is a periodic pacing at different frequency, and you can see this blue region where you start seeing alternance. For Gaussian distribution, this is where you start seeing alternance, and this is constant DI pacing. And our threshold was 4 milliseconds for alternance. So everything less than 4 milliseconds, we do not consider.
But in general, when you have a rabbit, the alternance is
let me see.
8 milliseconds, something like that.
Let me see. Okay. If you look at scale here, it's minus 20 to 20. So we do have a discordant alternance there.
But Lena, did you look at DI afterwards to see how well the DI was served during?
Did I see a DI afterwards? DI is controlled. DI is fixed.
Your control
what
is
like DI calculated from the
coupling from optical mapping.
Yeah, and this is what I showed. That source of error is where we tested our system. The one that we wanted and the one that was recorded. 3 millisecond difference. So we kind of assume that it's real good. And this is for different, so if you want DI 90 millisecond, we get it plus minus 3 second. Yes.
So this is what I don't understand still. Depending where you look, the heart activation, the range of activation of the heart is many milliseconds. You apply stimulus at the same time, depending where you look.
We apply at base of the heart. And still we are able to control entire heart. Yes. Yes, sorry. This is, we look if APD heterogeneity is affecting, it's not affecting. This is APD heterogeneity, similar for all pacing. And we look at the slope of restitution. You clearly see that restitution is very flat for constant DI, which is by definition. And this is the restitution for periodic versus Gaussian pacing.
Yeah, and also this is that you get a very large APD. When you're doing constant DI,
we do a constant
DI. It's not the same that you get from
APD is, we don't control APD. We provide a small DI, and APD is free to do whatever it's doing.
Right, but it's only on 40.
Again, the point of this stimulation was to eliminate alternance. And we eliminate alternance by reducing the feedback mechanism. We are saying we control DI, and we don't ask a question what APD is doing. It's doing whatever it's physiologically doing for certain DI.
Is the average heart rate the same in each one of those different conditions?
Heart rate. Let's see, because heart rate should not matter because we pace at different frequency. We pace at different frequency, so we destroyed the SA node, so it does not, you know, like.
So, but you're comparing the effects of periodic Gaussian, physiological, and constant DI?
Yes.
But for each of those, is the mean heart rate the same? or the mean heart rate different under the different circumstances?
But how does a heart rate play a role? We don't I think you can look here and you can calculate APD plus DI, so it will be larger for BCL, will be larger for constant DI pacing. Is that what you're asking?
You're comparing three different things there.
Yeah.
So under those three different things, you're pacing in different ways.
Yes.
But is the pacing rate controlled and the same in each of those
pacing
ways, or are they different?
Right. Pacing rate is controlled under this blue and red, and they're the same. They have the same pacing rate. Green one, we do not control pacing rate. We control constant DI. So the pacing rate and APD are free to do whatever they want to do. We only control constant DI.
Much higher.
Well, but yes, if you calculate from here, it will be much higher, but we do not control it.
So the pacing rate is much slower.
The pacing rate is much slower.
And you have less alternates.
Yes. But what we are claiming here, but applying a constant DI protocol eliminate alternance by whatever mechanism it's doing it. We do not see alternance in the heart.
Can you just slow the pacing rate and the alternance?
If you think about clinical situation and people getting CRT therapy with a certain rate for years, and this CRT therapy create alternance and ventricular fibrillation, the question you ask, what you can do to improve the pacing to avoid alternance formation?
So with a constant DI, if you calculate the pacing cycle length,
it will be different.
And what the distribution would look like, and how would it compare to the periodic?
We didn't do it. You can calculate, I think, from here.
Yeah.
You can calculate from here.
With constant DI, you have an error bars of 10 milliseconds up and down.
Right here?
You're saying you got, yeah.
Because it's eight animals. It's coming from eight animals.
Yeah.
So it's animals here. Yeah. But in each animal, we have 3 milliseconds, you know, like.
Well, 3 milliseconds in the recording time.
It's versus what we want DI to be and what DI is.
But the thing is that you calculate from the from checking in your optical mapping, right?
Yes.
Your optical mapping, your system is actually relatively small, 64 by 64.
Yes.
So for the whole heart.
Yes.
So you have a lot of spatial resolution, and also you have to average a little bit of time. So once you do the spatial average and the time average, you may be getting rid of all the small alternates that is already there for more than, you may have alternates, but you cannot really see it.
You mean small alternance smaller than 4 milliseconds?
Larger than that, yeah. But you're already averaging it, so you don't see it.
No, but we do the same. See, this is our data for constant DI. We don't see alternance. That's
from
it.
What pixel?
From all pixels, it's all white. So if you see alternance, it will be, you know, this blue color, white color right here. This is your alternance.
But with your with the optical mapping that you're using and plus the filtering that you're applying, what's the smallest difference that you can resolve at the end?
Okay, this is our actual traces, so, and we put in 4 milliseconds. We can resolve, we can do up to 2 milliseconds. It's robust.
So that's based on your sampling rates?
Yes.
But, yes.
And signal to noise
ratio. That's theoretical maximum, but in practice you have much less.
That's why we put 4 milliseconds here. 4 milliseconds is a very robust. Okay. You can look here, it's more than 4 millisecond alternance. You can look even some, you know, yellowish dots here. I don't see if you can see it. So we do see, we resolve alternance at a high resolution. And since we're doing everything, all the protocols are applied to the same heart. We are not doing different heart, we are not doing different condition. All protocols applied multiple times in the same heart.
From an electrode or from a
what is it?
The pacing.
The pacing is from just electrode at the base of the heart.
So this is before control, right?
Yeah, this is periodic, and when we incorporated heart rate variability, and this is when we did constant DI.
So go back to the constant DI, right? So with the periodic, I mean, you see the alternate you get is 5 milliseconds. So you take out the
5 millisecond alternance.
It's within your error, you believe, in 3 milliseconds.
No, but you can look here. There are alternance, I mean, look. We can pace faster, but we want to avoid for heart to go to fibrillation because we want to apply all protocols in the same heart. Yeah, but no, but then I would be very careful about it. You change the state of the heart. We don't do it in my lab. No, we actually excluded all experiments in which we cannot apply all four protocols together at the same heart. We excluded them. I mean, like, I want all protocols to be in the same heart for, you know, to do.
Can you pace faster using the?
We can pace faster, then we see a larger alternance.
But
see, with constant DI, we're already doing. Yeah. We're already doing 30 milliseconds. You cannot do smaller than, like 30 milliseconds is a very small constant. Yeah. You cannot go smaller than that. It doesn't make any sense. That's why we can't kind of restrict it.
So here, I mean, for the same value of the DI in different protocols, you get completely different values of APD.
Yes.
But that means that restitution curve is not working.
That's entire my point. The restitution is not working. By doing a constant DI protocol, you eliminate restitution-based mechanism.
No,
alternance.
No,
this is very interesting. So what I think, well, first it works. In rabbit, fast-paced integrates believe it's mainly calcium instead of it, but calcium is coupled to voltage through NCX and calcium-dependent activation of LCC. So what's probably happening is that the constant DI is able to stabilize the calcium system, and so then you have a different restitution curve. That could be worked out. Actually.
Because we don't have a mechanism how to explain.
Theoretical problem.
We have, and we trying to work using model right now to work on it because I don't have explanation for it.
Would have like the restitution curve is correct, what I would expect is that, you know, when you increase the pacing rate, you have like two alternates, but still you have an unstable fixed order. And then what I would expect with constant DI, you would stabilize
this is what, okay, let me make a remark, which is not, I understand, which is might not be mathematical, but this is the way I like to think about it. When you have alternance and you apply all schemes to control alternance, you're actually controlling them. What we do here, we're preventing them from formation. We don't control them. We don't allow them to happen. Okay, we are doing constant DI pacing. This is a consequence of constant DI pacing. There is a mechanism behind it. I still don't know what is the mechanism.
It would be interesting to do calcium imaging.
I know, and we are working on it. We are working on it.
It would be, but the feedback is
right.
Yes.
Very strong. You have calcium alternates, but you said constant voltage.
But anyway, this is what. Yeah, sorry.
This is great in another sense for you, but there's also earlier data in dogs that showed this didn't work.
Yes, and
I don't know if you have any ideas.
Yes, I have an explanation. As I said, this constant DI can eliminate only one mechanism, which is restitution based with periodic pacing mechanism for alternance.
But if this is driven by calcium,
I don't know. This is what happened in healthy heart.
In the rabbit, if you take out calcium,
right. We can. We are going. I'm guessing if you do the same in ischemic heart in rabbit, it might not work.
But that's different type of alternance. Yes. Ischemic alternance.
So let me answer Elizabeth first. So
Alan is already planning how to deal with the calcium side of this.
Alan,
you're saying it's not calcium.
Alan.
I don't know.
Sorry.
So what are we planning to do?
We're planning simulations without knowing all the things behind.
We are planning to do optical mapping with calcium and image calcium.
Yeah.
And that would at least give some idea why it's working. This is only thing
but you're saying you don't think it is calcium because there are earlier studies where it doesn't work and maybe
yes,
that was calcium.
If it's other mechanisms than restitution-based mechanism, I'm not sure it will be working.
But in the rabbit, if you take out calcium, alternance disappears. So okay. The rabbit is driven by calcium. The alternance in the rabbit is driven by calcium. Same as in the dog. And in the dog, you take out calcium, the alternance disappears.
Okay.
And the studies of the alternance,
they did it in dog.
And in dog, it didn't work. And in the fish, the alternance is really driven by voltage, and in the fish, doesn't work.
The only thing I can do, I can map calcium under the same protocol and show you the data.
If you look at the slope with the
this one.
This graph, if you look at the slowest point with the diastolic interval,
of the
60, at 60 milliseconds, the action potential duration is about 130.
Yes.
So your period is about 190 milliseconds. If you look at the fastest point,
the diastolic interval,
you have 30 milliseconds, and that's at
140, 170.
130. So both of those points are doing approximately the same thing.
This is what constant DI is doing, again. It's a mechanism for eliminate
active transport. You're pacing it exactly the same way in both of them, at about 190 beats per second.
But this is a free run. I mean, we are not controlling pacing for constant DI.
No, it does control in constant DI. But you're essentially doing the same.
It's doing the same, but we're eliminating alternance.
No, but I mean, you have to be, so Blas made a good point, right? So there is the solution that becomes unstable, but you never get to the bifurcation beyond which the solution becomes unstable.
How would I get to that bifurcation?
Smaller DI
of 30 milliseconds is already small enough. All other DIs are not physiological.
Well, keeping the period very long.
But for the period, you have a higher dimensional amount. And then you're also in different types of each month. That's why in one case you get...
If you look,
the scale is your parameter,
right?
It never gets to the bifurcation.
Let me just conclude. We measured the slope, which makes sense. We also measured the minimum diastolic interval, which is one of the clinical parameters. How far you can get, how small you can have a diastolic interval. And they are just a little bit different. So we have the same clinical condition of small diastolic interval. In one case, we do not have alternance. In another case, we do have alternance. Restitution, slope, it's all consequence of diastolic interval pacing.
But the main point is that your diastolic interval that you should control still is not, it's small, but it's not, if you haven't reached the
at the same level as small diastolic interval for periodic pacing.
So then you're alternating.
That's exactly my point. In this case, you do have alternance. In this case, you don't have alternance. For whatever reason,
Do you have these where you have the APD here? You're measuring against just the average APD, so we don't know where you saw alternates from.
Okay, I have some values.
You don't know where the bifurcation.
No, we didn't do it. We didn't compute the exact constant DI versus.
For anything,
I think we have a problem here of putting a data together because this one will always be at different values.
Which one is
the constant DI. So these two goes together.
But you want
to draw a bifurcation for periodic, and you are saying that constant DI is controlling the unstable behavior. It's not the mechanism because it's going lower at completely different rate, frequency.
Well, EV versus period.
Yes, I will. I can do it. We didn't do it.
Volume versus DI doesn't help because you have different DIs.
This is something I can go back and analyze. I can definitely go. But okay, this is our experimental data, and let me just thank all my students who was there. And actually, I am very proud that this real-time control algorithm was written by an undergraduate student in 4 months. He was very smart. Okay, and I'm very proud of him. All right, this is my data.